This week on the show, a wild ending for the Patriots Sunday night in Pittsburgh. We try to make sense of all of that, plus make sense of what the NFL playoff picture is going to look like in a couple of weeks. And we take a look back at the high and low points of 2017 in sports. All that and more coming up. Calling It starts right now. It is our last show of the year. Happy holidays to everybody, and especially to us Patriots fans. How's it going, Alex Lebowitz?
It's going great. It was a fun game yesterday, and we're about finished with 2017. So a lot to go over, a lot to kind of take in and reflect on. But overall, I'm doing pretty well.
Let's start with maybe the game of 2017. The regular season game of 2017, for sure. Last night, the New England Patriots defeating the Pittsburgh Steelers. I want to remind everybody, this is the Callin' It Podcast. We are powered by CLNS Media. You can follow us on Twitter at Callin' It Podcast. Follow CLNS at CLNS Media. You can get the show on their new website, clnsmedia.com. So it's a victory Monday. I know the Bruins and Celtics had good weeks, but this is going to be a very football-heavy show. It's our last show together before the NFL playoffs. Next week's Christmas, then New Year's. You're jetting off out of the country. Mm-hmm. I'm going to try to get some stuff out about football. We'll see. Follow our Twitter to get all that. But what a way to go out. Sunday evening, Patriots take down the Steelers with 27-24, right? In the most improbable ending you will ever see. And let's start with the ending of that game, because the Patriots played poorly, and there's a lot to at times, and there's a lot to discuss there. But what you saw last night, or Monday night, if you're listening to this after Monday, Sunday night, what you saw Sunday night is an example of why the Patriots are the Patriots and the other 31 teams are the other 31 teams for the last 17 years. So they if you didn't watch the game, if you haven't caught up, catch up. Steelers, the Patriots scored with about 50 seconds to go, took a three-point lead. Steelers got the ball back, had a 60-something yard catch and run by Juju Smith-Schuster, putting him down near the 10-yard line. Next play, I think there was an incompletion, and then the play after that.
No, it was the next play.
It was the next play.
Okay. Jesse James.
So yeah. Pittsburgh throws over the middle. Jesse James, the tight end, looks like he's in the end zone. It's overturned. They said he didn't maintain the catch to the ground. It's the Calvin Johnson rule. Mm-hmm. Steelers run one more play. They run a little flat route to Hayward Bay, Darius Hayward Bay. Tackled inbounds by Malcolm Butler.
Great
excellent
play.
Tackle, and that's going to get lost in all this. And then the clock's running. They have no timeouts left. The Steelers go to fake snap or fake spike, and it's a whole jumble of nonsense, and the pass intercepted. So going back to the challenge, the call that was overturned, and this is what sets the Patriots apart from everybody else for the last 17 years. Mike Tomlin was just standing around. He was just waiting for the decision. He wasn't doing anything. He was so sure that was going to go his way. Even if Belichick's 99% sure that a call is going to stand, he is talking to his quarterback, his coordinator, all of it. Okay, here's what we're going to do. If it's overturned, we're going to run this the play out of it. If mm-hmm. we gain this many yards, we go to this the next play. If we gain this many yards, we go to this. If it gets to fourth down, we're going to do this. If we have to clock it, we're going to clock it here. We want the ball on this hash. If we have to kick a field goal, right? They're figuring all that out. And then they were ready for the fake snap. They practiced that play. They mm-hmm. practice that play every week. Mm-hmm. It's the first time they've seen a fake spike in years. Last night was the purest example of situational football, one team being ready for a situation, the other team not. And when people say, how are the Patriots been so good throughout all this time with all the roster turnover, Brady and Belichick are part of it, but the emphasis Belichick and Ernie Adams put on situational football that no other team has figured out to do is why the Patriots are the Patriots and the other 31 teams are the other 31 teams.
Yeah, I saw a tweet yesterday, and it was someone on Twitter saying, the Pats are the luckiest team in the NFL. I can't wait till they lose to the Jaguars in the playoffs. And my first reaction is, yeah, definitely. The Blake Bortles and Doug Marone right. are going to come into New England, beat the Patriots. But my second reaction was, the Patriots aren't lucky. They're just less dumb than the rest of the NFL.
I mean, there's some luck involved.
Absolutely.
But like, that was not a lucky play. And everybody said, oh, the call got overturned. If it's so easy to score from the 8-yard line, Pittsburgh had two more chances to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't.
And they were on a run. So they had momentum at that point, and they it was just horrible play calling.
Right, clock the ball, kick the field goal. You have them back against the wall, go to overtime.
You're at home, Heinz Field, one of the loudest atmospheres. You take the tie for the time being, then you try to win it. You know, there is...
Now, how much of the decision to go for the win do you think had to do with them knowing who the other quarterback was and seeing what he
had done? It's the world of difference. You know, if you have Brady, who just had a go-ahead drive, a game-winning drive, essentially, right. You know that if he gets the ball in overtime, the Patriots are winning that game.
They saw the Super Bowl.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
And that's still... The Patriots own so much real estate in every other team's head, and we've seen it time and time again. You say, oh, how does every other coach make such bad decisions, right? Why is Tomlin doing this? Why did Dan Quinn do this? Why did Pete Carroll do this? Going back to the Houston game at the beginning of the year. Because they are so worried about what Tom Brady is going to do, it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy.
But this is also Ben Roethlisberger making a horrible decision. And that's something that Tom Brady, although he had a really bad pick earlier in the game, which we should probably talk about.
We'll get to that.
But Ben Roethlisberger made a horrible decision in the most crucial moment in that game.
Well, let's talk about this. I don't mean to keep cutting you off here, much stuff I want to to. I want to make sure we keep the conversation moving because we got to touch on all of it. It was one of the best nights I've had in a long time.
Oh, yeah.
So if you saw the comments post-game, Ben said he wanted to clock it. First of all, he threw the rest of his team under the bus, which is so classic Steelers.
Ben Roethlisberger, if you don't know by now, which is probably up there on the list, by the way, he is
that's a major market tease.
He is one of the biggest D-bags in all of sports. So there is that. But go on.
Okay, so did you see what he said after the game about that play?
Apparently Tomlin wanted them. He didn't want to do the fake spike. He just wanted to spike
Roethlisberger wanted to clock it.
Exactly.
And he heard from the sideline as he took the snap, don't clock it. So I think him and Eli Rogers were the only two who heard don't clock it. Mm-hmm. So it was a total confusion. And Ben actually was in the right. You clocked that ball.
Absolutely.
You absolutely clocked that ball.
Yeah.
So that was going to be my question is, who do you put the blame on for what happened? Put the blame on for the loss. There's a lot of different people. But just that one play, do you put the blame on Ben? Do you put it on the coaching staff, the sideline? Or do you put it on the receivers?
I mean, Ben's the one who made the play. He could have thrown it in the ground still. There's no, like, you can still spike it. If he's not open, don't force it.
So you can't. That actually happened a couple years ago. I forget who the quarterback was. There was a broken up, was supposed to be a fake spike. The guy clocked it and it was grounding. If you want to spike it, you have to spike it right away or it's grounding.
Okay.
And they would have lost the down in the yardage.
Can still throw it over the back of the end zone.
You hum that ball out of the back of the end
zone.
Exactly. Instead of throwing it in a double
coverage. There is a way to get around that. He's the one who had the ball in his hands. He's the one who made the play. But obviously, you spike it there because you know the Patriots, as they always are going to be ready for that play. They knew it. You can see them telling each other, watch out for the fake spike. And you had four guys in that one area
uniforms. I saw it coming from my couch.
Absolutely. And me and my brother were watching the game. I'm like, they're going to try to fake spike it here. Everyone saw it coming, including Daron Harmon and that entire Patriots secondary. And still, Roethlisberger tried to force that ball in the end zone because I think in the back of his head, in the back of Mike Tomlin's head, he knew Tom Brady gets the ball in overtime. Patriots are winning this game, and we're the second seed in the AFC. So that it's a culmination of things. The one thing you have to just you know after a game like that, and you know going into it, is the Patriots are the Patriots and the Steelers are the Steelers. I think the Steelers have probably a more talented team than the Patriots this season, but they have a dumber quarterback and a much dumber, overrated, I might add, coaching staff led by Mike Tomlin.
Let's go down this road now because first of all, how much did you enjoy all the Patriots hate on Twitter yesterday?
Oh, that's great. I love it. I shower in that.
So on the odds that Steelers fans are listening to this, let's go through the Steelers' list of excuses for why they lost this game. Number one, injuries. They didn't have Antonio Brown and Ryan Shazier, who are very good players. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
Who didn't the Patriots have in this game?
Let's see. Dante Hightower, Julian Edelman, Chris Hogan, Kyle Van Noy. Did Alan Branch play?
Alan Branch did not play.
Alan Branch was out.
Marcus Cannon. Tackle.
You had Cameron Fleming in for him.
Burkhead missed a chunk of the game.
Burkhead was out for a while. Mike Gillisley has been on the
team. Okay, so we've put that one to bed.
Okay.
Right? All right. Pittsburgh fans love to whine about injuries every time they play the Patriots. Somebody goes down. By the time the Patriots play the Steelers, you know, their roster's decimated. The Patriots are fully healthy yesterday. That's nowhere close to a ball game. The other big excuse I heard yesterday, That was a bad call by the officials. First of all, hate the rule all you want. I actually think it's a good rule. I like the catch rule the way it is. I think you should have to maintain possession to the ground.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't think they, and I'm in the minority on that, and that's fine. But that was called correctly. That ball moved.
Even if you don't like the rule, yeah, it was the correct call.
Do you remember, who was it against? Gronk lost a touchdown on literally the exact same play.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to remember the game, but it was in the middle of the year. It might have been against the Jets.
This season?
Yeah. That Gronk caught a ball over the middle, caught it at the one, kind of falling down, and when he reached for the end zone, the ball moved, and they called it an incompletion.
I don't recall.
And I think it was called a touchdown on the field. He was called down on the one at the field. He didn't touch down on Mike James, but his move for the end zone, they ruled it an incompletion. So that's a consistent call, but you really want to say, okay, if that entire game was officiated correctly, that the Steelers win that game, let's go back to the Eli Rogers touchdown when they picked up the flag for an ineligible man well downfield.
And they show it. He's at least 3 or 4 yards past the line of scrimmage.
Let's talk about the pick on the Juju Smith-Schuster catch and run that went uncalled. That was more than a yard downfield.
Yep.
And let's talk about them taking away a 50-yard pass to Brandon Cooks, who was pushed out of bounds, did not go out on his own. CBS didn't show a replay, but they called that back for illegal touching. So if you want the flags to go, if you wanted it to be a robot-officiated game where everything goes as it should have been, okay, Steelers, but you're not in the position. That Jesse James call doesn't get made. You're not in the position there.
Yeah.
So hopefully we just shattered some Steelers fans' dreams. Real quick here before we wrap the segment up, obviously there were some dark spots for the Patriots yesterday. They got two games left, still have to take care of business, two divisional games. We know what the Bills are going to come out with, given the way that game ended the last time. And then you have the Dolphins again. What are your biggest concerns here down the stretch?
I think Tom Brady, I think we need to start talking about his play declining. He's still the best quarterback in football. Don't get ahead of me here. He's still the best football quarterback in football. But it's been, what, 3 straight weeks in which he's thrown a pick, and we never see that. There's been bad decision-making. And you could go back to the fact that the offensive line has not been...
Offensive line's been bad.
And when that happens, he does get rattled. That's not something new with Tom Brady's career. But he's been making bad decisions. He has been off target once in a while, and he's not quite as sharp as we're used to seeing. That's not my biggest concern, obviously, but that is a concern. My biggest concern is the health of Kyle Van Noy and this defense specifically. Will they be able to stop Ben Roethlisberger and the Steelers in the playoffs? And I don't know. I like to think they'll be able to because it's a team that's great situationally and they're well coached, but they don't have a lot of talent. And this goes back to Bill Belichick, the GM. He's a great coach. I think he gets coachable players on purpose. But talent-wise, the Patriots aren't a top-three team, I don't think. I think they have a lot of top-tier talent, but they're not stacked, and I feel like they could be constructed a little bit better. And this isn't an original point. People have made this point in the past. But that is a concern. It is. And injuries have played a factor. You got to acknowledge that.
So I think if they're healthy, they're the most talented team in football.
Yes.
It's not even close.
Yeah, I'd say so. With Dante Hightower healthy, that defense is so much better. And with Julian Edelman, obviously, that offense is a lot better.
So just to touch on some things you said, I actually thought Brady looked pretty good yesterday. Outside of, he had two bad plays. He had the interception, which was very uncharacteristic. And there was a play. He didn't miss Jacob Hollister in the end zone, but he came around to the read too late. By the time he threw it, he was out of bounds. So outside of those two, I thought Brady looked very good yesterday. There was one point.
There was also Amendola was wide open. It was a third down. Amendola, he had him on a wheel route, and he was dead. Wide open in his direction.
But basically, what I thought is that seemed like the kind of game to me. There was one point where I said, "All right, they're hitting Brady often. He's going to go into a shell, and it's going to be one of these games where he just starts throwing everything short on checkdowns, and it's over." This was the first time in a while I didn't see him go into that shell. I was impressed the resolve he showed. He was a different kind of Tom Brady yesterday. I'm actually okay with him going forward. The biggest concern for me is that they get this defense right. Getting Kyle Van Noy will help, but it looked like early in the season last year, first of all, Trey Flowers in coverage. There's no reason for that. They did that week one. It killed them. They've gone away from it since. I don't know what the hell Matt Patricia was doing yesterday.
The one again on the sidelines?
There were a couple.
Yeah.
He was in coverage twice yesterday.
There was a third down conversion with him in coverage.
Right, on Le'Veon Bell.
Yeah,
the defensive game plan yesterday was atrocious.
Shows what their depth's like in their in their linebacking group.
Right, but still, the play call was atrocious. Figure that out. Get Kyle Van Noy back. Figure out what's going on. Get back to that team that held opponents under 17 points for, what was it, 8 straight weeks.
Yeah.
Which I think they can do. You got to get that figured out, and figure out if Malcolm Mitchell's coming back.
Mm-hmm.
It would be huge if they get him back down the stretch here, because him and Kenny Britt, you have some size there. So that's what I'm watching here.
Well, you have one player from the IR that you can bring back. So I think there will be a player come playoff time.
It's going to be Mitchell or Valentine.
One of those two, unless there's someone who's healthier, who's healthy sooner than we expect. But yeah, it's going to be interesting to watch. And I'm not worried about Brady down the stretch. I just think there has been a decline in his play this season when you compare it to last season. I still think he's a great quarterback.
And I can't believe we haven't said this name yet. But how about Rob Gronkowski yesterday?
Oh, my goodness.
What are the Steelers doing? Man on man with a corner on that guy in that spot?
Yeah.
He's 6'7". What is he, 270?
Probably 260 at least.
Take the freaking corner off of him. It's not that hard.
Mm-hmm.
They've been doing this for years. How much do you want him playing against Buffalo?
You need him to. You need him to. Because you can't afford to lose right now. You can't afford to lose.
That's true.
So he needs to play the rest of the game. And that's what happens when you lose to Jay Cutler and the Dolphins.
Yep.
I'm sorry. So you need him to be out there. They're at home, though, for this.
I know, but just the Buffalo and what happened last time, they're going for his knee. Buffalo's looking to end his season.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. It's gonna be tough. It's gonna be chippy. That's
as soon as that game gets you need to get up early. So when that game gets chippy, you can get him out.
Absolutely.
That's I think the game plan for next week.
One more thing I want to say.
Yeah.
Because people are bringing this up with the Jacksonville pass rush and the weapons that they have. Jacksonville is not beating the Patriots in the playoffs. Can we just
they're
stop
not beating
saying
Pittsburgh
that?
In the playoffs?
Exactly.
Somebody told me last night that Jacksonville is going to go into Pittsburgh and beat the Steelers. No.
No, they're not. They're not. They're going to be bumped out in the second round. And no later than that. They are not that good of a team. They have talent, but they have a crappy coach and a crappy quarterback. And at the end of the day, when you're in the playoffs, those are the two most important things to have. So that Jacksonville team, they're bums. It's a bunch of bums. They're not beating the Patriots at Gillette. They're not beating the Steelers at Heinz. They suck. They don't suck, but they're not in the same class. They're just not in the same class. So stop that discussion. I know there's a lot of people who want the hot take of the Jaguars are going to do this. They're going to pull it off. You heard it here first. Not going to happen. They stink. They stink relative to the Patriots and relative to the Steelers.
All right. That's actually a perfect segue for what's up next. Because this is the last time we're going to talk, take a look at the NFL playoff machine. What can we expect the standings to look like when we get back? Talk about it on the other side. You're listening to Callin' It, powered by CLNS.
Callin' It is brought to you by American Broadcast Coaches, training the next generation of media talent and communicators. For more information, check out AmericanBroadcastCoaches.com.
Welcome back to Callin' It, powered by CLNS. I'm Alex Barth. He's Alex Lebowitz. So after yesterday's games, there's some big games in the NFC, too. The playoff picture starting to take shape around the NFL. We have five teams that have clinched playoff spots, 3 in the AFC, 2 in the NFC. Four of those teams, this writing's really small here on NFL.com, 4 of those teams have clinched their divisions. Right now, Patriots are the 1 seed, the Steelers are the 2, the Jaguars are the 3 in the AFC. That's all that's been clinched. In the NFC, the Eagles, I think, have already clinched a first-round bye, if I'm not mistaken. They have. They've clinched everything but home field. And the Vikings have clinched their division as well. So, where do you want to start with this, Lovitz? Hang on, your mic's off, because I was doing the real one.
That reminds me,
I wanted to say, at the top of the show, I forgot, excuse my voice, but the Patriots game last night.
Yes, it was wild. Let's start with the AFC, and I think we know 1 through 3. It's going to be New England, Pittsburgh, Jacksonville. Maybe that's not the order it finishes out, but that's going to be the top three.
Well,
teams.
I think those have to be the top three at this point. I don't think the AFC West. Jacksonville would have to really bottom out for an AFC West team to take that third spot.
And Pittsburgh has the Steelers and Browns, so you assume they're going to win their last two. The Jaguars, they have to play Tennessee. I think it's going to finish up like this. I don't think anything's changing. I see New England beating Buffalo and the Dolphins these next 2 weeks. Bottom three, though, because you have on the bubble, you have the Ravens and the Chargers on the outside looking in. And then you have Buffalo who's playing New England this weekend, and then the Dolphins. Which could be rough for them. I think we're going to see another season where the Bills aren't in the playoffs after being right there, which is going to be hilarious. Can't wait to drink Buffalo Bills.
Yeah, no, they're in right now. So there's in the AFC, there's seven teams left for three spots.
Yep.
The AFC West is that's probably going to be the flex game week 17 between the Chiefs, the Raiders with their big win last night. Their loss. The Raiders' big loss last night. And the Chargers, you have 6-8, 7-7, and 8-6. So that's all right down the wire. Jacksonville with a win will lock up the division against the Titans. But yeah, the Bills, they don't have that. I don't believe they have the head to head against the Ravens. The Chargers are right there. I don't see how the Bills make this.
I don't think they are. I think you look at the Ravens, who they have a couple easy games coming up. So they're going to sneak in. I think
that's scary to me because they're always one of those teams that if they get in, even if it's at the last second, right by the tip of their fingers, they'll do damage.
Yeah, I don't think they have this. I don't think they have a roster that's really good enough to do much damage.
I could see them going into Jacksonville, beating Jacksonville.
Yeah, maybe. I don't think they're going to be a threat to the Steelers or the Patriots. Again, Jacksonville, they're a fraud. I don't think that's a legit team. I want to see them beat some better opponents before I really buy into them. So the Ravens, yeah, they could easily upset anyone. I think with the exception of I think even the Patriots could get upset in this playoffs, but yeah, I don't have Buffalo making it. I think it's going to be Kansas City, Tennessee, and then Baltimore, 4-6. It's going to be kind of what we expect going in.
I just wonder what happens because the Chargers have been hot and they had a bad game this week. But I still think the Chargers sneak in with that last spot. I think it's going to be the Titans, the Chargers, the Chiefs for those final three. In the NFC, meanwhile, so the Eagles, they're sitting pretty at the top at 12-2. The Vikings at 11-3. They're in. They're good. The Rams at 10-4. Who would have thought the Rams all of a sudden, they're kind of fighting for their playoff lives right here. Things are far from clinched for them, and they have a tough schedule coming up. They still have to play Seattle. They have another tough game as well. I think they play Tennessee next week, I believe. Or did they just play Tennessee?
They just played Seattle.
They have some tough games coming up. I forget the
schedule. They have the Titans next week, and then they have the 49ers, but that's a Jimmy Garoppolo-led 49ers.
So they got some tough games coming up. The Saints, who at some point people thought were the best team in the NFC, at 10-4, the 4 seed. The Panthers are a wild card, and then the Falcons. You have the Lions peeking in at 8-6. The Seahawks peeking in at 8-6, who are starting to implode after getting blown out yesterday. Cowboys are still alive at 8-6, and the Packers hanging around with Aaron Rodgers are not technically eliminated yet at 7-7. I love the NFC this year. I think it's been a lot of fun. Let me ask you this. Who are your top two teams, aside from rankings, who are the top two teams in the NFC right now for you?
For me, you got to go Vikings. I think they're number one, especially with Carson Wentz out. If Carson Wentz was in, I'd pick...
Well, Foles was great yesterday.
He did do well, but I don't know if he's going to be able to carry that team. He hasn't played all season. So for him to go into the playoffs and make some noise, that's unlikely for me. I have Minnesota, and I'm going to go New Orleans just because of Drew Brees. I feel like this is a year where they've been very good, and he's a veteran quarterback. You think if they make it in the play, when they make it to the playoffs, he'll have a really good, string of games put together. Now, the Rams, young team. We don't know what Jared Goff and that team's like in the postseason. After that win yesterday against the Seahawks, so you got to be looking at them legitimately. So if you were to go Vikings, Rams, I get that. I'm going New Orleans just because of the veteran.
So you
presence.
Know mine, Vikings and the Rams.
Yeah, it's got to be,
I just
right?
don't like the Saints going into Philly or. You know, if for whatever reason they maybe have to go into Detroit. Well, Detroit's indoors, I guess. I don't like the Saints going into Philly and winning. The Saints are going to get a lot of help by the fact the Vikings play indoors.
Yeah.
Because there's no way Drew Brees is going into Minnesota outdoors and winning a playoff game. We've seen him try and do it. But, I mean, this is going to be outside. I think Vikings and Rams is the game of this next round. But you're probably going to have a 10-win team on the outside looking in. Maybe two.
Potentially. I don't know, though. It's gonna be interesting to see the Falcons, Falcons, Lions, Seahawks, and then Cowboys. that's going to be fun to watch shape up. I got to tell you. I don't think I'll have a 10-1 team on the outside.
I think you will because you have the Panthers.
Like 08 all over again.
Right.
Yeah. Potentially, yeah. I mean, and that's they've been stacked. It's been very, very balanced in that conference. A lot of really tight divisions. So you're probably going to have that, yeah. And that's with all the injuries that have occurred on all these teams. You have the Packers who won't make it even with Rodgers coming back. You have the Cowboys without Zeke. The Seahawks who have been a lot better as of late.
Until yesterday.
So there's going to be probably two or three teams that would have made in the AFC that aren't going to be in the playoffs because of how tight and how good the NFC's been this season.
Who are you looking to in that group that's in right now? So obviously we won't count the Eagles and the Vikings, but Rams, Saints, Panthers, Falcons, who's going to drop out?
I don't see any of those teams.
You think it stays the way it is right now?
Let's see who the
so
Falcons.
The Falcons have to play the Saints next week.
They got the Saints and the Panthers.
The Falcons make it. I think the Falcons are on the inside. I actually think the Lions are going to get in.
Yeah, looking at that, yeah, I don't have the confidence.
And I said at the beginning of the year, right?
Yeah.
That the Falcons weren't going to get in. I just think they're still shocked from the Super Bowl.
But if they do, if they win tonight against the Bucks,
right, they still have one more game. They're still behind.
And then they win one out of two in their last 2 weeks, which they can do against the Panthers or Saints.
If 10 wins is enough to get them in, what's going to really help them out. And remember that crazy week? I think it was week four. It was the week the Patriots beat the Texans. And there were all those crazy endings. The Eagles beat the Giants on like a 60-yard field goal.
Yep.
The Falcons played the Lions that week. And do you remember Golden Tate thought he got in the end zone? They ruled him down at the half-yard line on the last play.
Yeah.
There was a 10-second runoff, and the Lions lost that game.
Yeah.
That could be the difference between the Lions making the playoffs or not.
Because
if it comes down to the Lions and the Falcons, talk about a bad call on the goal line. All the Steelers fans bitching last night. You're still in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Go talk to Detroit. So real quick here, was wrapping things up, because, again, we won't talk to you again until the postseason. Who's your MVP, Rookie of the Year, Coach of the Year? Let's go with those three.
MVP has to be Tom Brady, although he's taking a step back. Russell Wilson's right behind him. You have Antonio Brown, who looks like he'll be out for a decent amount of time.
I can't imagine he plays again in the regular season because he's going to be out next week, they said already. And then
I think he's out for the year.
You shouldn't need him. Even if he can play week 17, you shouldn't need him against the Browns. Why risk it?
Yeah, exactly.
So they get some help from the schedule there.
I don't know, though. He got x-rays and then went to the hospital. That's never a good sign. It was weird, yeah. MVP's got to be Brady. I think there's really no one who's been as valuable to their team. You look at Russell Wilson, but yesterday they were brutal, and that team just isn't nearly as good. So you got to take that into consideration. Coach of the year, that's tough. I don't know who do you have for rookie of the year and coach of the year?
I'm going to go MVP too. Then I love how it was Brady and Wentz neck and neck, and then when Wentz got hurt, suddenly there were four people who could win it, and like it was a wide open race. MVP's Brady.
Yeah.
As unlike himself as he's looked, he's still been the best player in football this year. My coach of the year, I see a lot of people saying Doug Peterson with the Eagles, which is a good pick, especially, you know, if he can win some games with Nick Foles. I'm actually going to go McVay in L.A. with the Rams. I think he's done an excellent job turning that team around in what he's done with Jared Goff. I have him as my coach of the year. My rookie of the year has got to be Alvin Kamara. The dude is an absolute freak. I love watching him play. He's so exciting to watch. He's so much fun to watch. You can tell he still has a lot of room to grow his game, too. He's such a perfect fit in New Orleans. Alvin Kamara is my rookie of the year.
It would have been Deshaun Watson if he had stayed healthy,
yeah.
I think.
It would have been Dalvin Cook if he stayed healthy.
That, too. So, yeah, I'll go Kamara as well. For coach of the year, I'm going to go Peterson with what he's done with that team. They've taken a huge jump from last year to this year. So you got to look at that and give the coach credit for that.
Well, we're in the spirit of handing out awards here. On the other side, it's our last full show of 2017, like we've mentioned. So we take a look back. The good, the bad, and the ugly of 2017 in sports. You won't want to miss it. Keep it here. You're listening to Callin' It, powered by CLNS.
Callin' It is brought to you by American Broadcast Coaches, training the next generation of media talent and communicators. For more information, check out AmericanBroadcastCoaches.com.
Sarah Snack, T-Pain, Sarah Snack, Young Chuck,
It's been a decade now since that song was at the top of the charts.
Really?
A decade. It's a great song. Did you see he finally said what the lyrics are last week on Twitter?
Oh, throw your hand. What is it?
He had no. It was when he gets high pitched, it's and we or something. I forget. It rocked my mind at the time. That's a great song.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
Speaking of music, we didn't get to touch on Eminem's album, but I thought it was pretty good. For what's coming out now, obviously not up to usual Eminem standards. I just want to get that out there. Anyway, the reason we use that to set the span of 10 years, another year come and gone. It was a wild one in the year of sports. Once again, we all had a good time. And we're going to take a look back, some of the best, some of the worst moments of the year, and you get to be a part of this. So what we've done is, we have how many categories do we have here? Seven categories for whatever of the year. And we're going to throw out a couple nominees we have. We'll give our thoughts, but throughout the next week or two, we're going to put these up on Twitter as polls, and we're going to let people vote on them, and everybody can be a part in coming up with our end of the year awards. So you ready, Lovewitz?
I'm ready.
All right, so we'll start off with Game of the Year. This one was pretty cut and dry. The nominees are, drum roll, Super Bowl 51, Patriots and Falcons, World Series Game 5, the Astros, the Astros and
the Dodgers.
Right, yes. Sorry, I don't know why I almost said Indians. That was the game was what, right, 13-11?
13-12 in 10 innings. There were like four different three-plus run leads.
Seven home runs, I think, in that game.
Yeah, yeah.
So that was wild. Oregon and UNC in the Final Four, college basketball, if you remember that.
Yeah, one-point game.
Semifinal game, one-point game. Oregon missed two free throws late to lose it. And then Clemson, Alabama, the college football playoff, came down to the last play. You had Deshaun Watson throwing the game-winning touchdown to Hunter Renfro. Super Bowl, right?
For me, at least. Yeah, definitely. Because we've never seen an upset like that. I don't think in any sport. Really, no. Or not an upset, a comeback. A comeback like that. I don't think in any sport.
It's so the reason we don't have comeback of the year, because no duh.
Yeah, it's clear cut. So for me, that's the game of the year. And it was awesome. Honestly, though, I like their Super Bowl win over the Seahawks just as much, if not more. I think both are very exciting.
I mean, I think there's a case to be made for that world. I'm going to go Super Bowl, but that World Series game, all the baseball fanboys will slam that, I'm guessing.
Oh, yeah.
Upset of the year. So we don't have comeback, but we do have upset of the year. Mm-hmm. South Carolina basketball as a number 7 seed, making a run to the Final Four. They beat Duke. They beat Florida. They beat some powerhouses on their way there. We got to see Darius Rucker of Hootie and the Blowfish fame quite a bit during that run. You know how I feel about Hootie. Mm-hmm. Similar storyline here. The Nashville Predators getting all the way to the Stanley Cup as a number 8 seed, and that team really turned it on there in the playoffs. That was a lot of fun to watch. Jeff Horn beating Manny Pacquiao on ESPN, one of the first top-level fights ESPN put on. Now, there were some questionable decisions in that one. We thought about doing worst officiating call of 2017, but we would have doubled up on Horn-Pacquiao. So Jeff Horn over Manny Pacquiao, that was quite the upset. And BC over Duke a couple weeks ago in college basketball. BC unranked. Duke was number one?
One, yep.
One at the time. So a lot to choose from there. I'm torn. I think the Nashville one was great, but Jeff Horn over Pacquiao that was something.
Yeah, I have Nashville. I'm not a huge basketball guy. I don't even think I watched that one.
You're not a huge hockey guy.
I'm not, but I'm more into hockey than I am boxing.
Okay.
Did I say basketball?
You said basketball. I was very confused.
Okay, boxing. That's what they both start with a B, and I'm an idiot.
Okay.
But yeah, I'm going to choose Nashville just because you're an 8 seed. Yeah, it happens. The Kings did it a few years ago, and it is not easier, but more likely in hockey than it is in most other sports. But to see the run that team was on, if you're paying attention to it at all, was really impressive. And I'm always going to root for P.K. Subban, even if he was a Canadian. So I'm going to choose Nashville making it to the Stanley Cup as an 8 seed.
Yeah, seeing P.K. Subban go on that run and seeing all the delusional Bruins fans who don't like him get so pissed off.
So dumb.
Like, he's such a great player. Enjoy watching
great
him.
Great guy, too. What he's done.
That's true.
Philanthropically is so just very commendable.
Well, I would say to the Bruins fans what I say to Bills fans about Tom Brady. This is a rare talent. If you really enjoy the sport, you'll enjoy watching him even if he's beating you. Like, you don't have to root for him to beat you, but understand you're seeing something that not everybody
greatness.
Gets to see, right? Yeah. Athlete of the year, this is pretty simple. We took three MVPs and our guy, LeBron, Altuve, Connor McDavid, Tom Brady. There was some talk of throwing Christian Pulisic in there. Perhaps we'll get to him in a little bit. I'm going to go Brady, especially because he could theoretically win one title and put together another title season within the year. Altuve's close. Altuve had a heck of a year.
I think if you're going for the breakout player, someone who's somewhat undervalued, I'd go Altuve just because he is the best hitter in the MLB. And to do that at his size, I know it's an overplayed storyline, but it's still so impressive. They won the World Series, too. He's the best player on the team that won the World Series.
Yeah.
So it's between Brady and Altuve for that reason, best players on championship-caliber teams. I think Brady is more valuable to his team than Altuve is to the Astros. And the run that he put on in that Super Bowl and what he's done this season, he's probably the better player. But I'm going Altuve just because it's more of a breakout season for him.
Play of the year. Obviously, this one's a little spotty because you got to remember specific plays. So we did our best. We have two from the Super Bowl, so clearly we didn't look that hard. Julian Edelman's catch was outstanding, but the Julio catch that should have iced the game, like the third time that the Falcons should have iced that game. The toe tap over Eric Rowe. We also have LeBron with the self alley-oop dunk over Kevin Durant in the NBA Finals. That play was something. And if you're a college football fan, you'll remember this one. It was early in the season. Josh Rosen's game-winning touchdown, showing how you're supposed to run a fake spike, beating Texas A&M. That was an awesome throw, an awesome ball by Josh Rosen. I got to go Edelman's catch.
Yes.
I'm going to go Edelman's catch, Julio's catch, Rosen, and then LeBron. Because part of the thing with LeBron now, when he makes a spectacular play, he's almost hurt himself in that it's LeBron. So you're like, yeah, but it's LeBron. Like, it's a great play, but he does it so regularly. It's not as jaw-dropping anymore. I know we had a bunch of baseball plays, too, people wanted us to put in. It's just tough for me to put in, like, a catch. I don't know. It's weird.
I think you could have picked so many from either Kevin Pillar or Jackie Bradley Jr. Just
Byron Buxton had a couple.
Yeah, there's been a lot of really good plays in the MLB this year. It's hard to narrow it down to one catch and, like, look at that. Like, it was that one. For me, it is the Edelman Super Bowl catch.
Yeah.
Another thing we didn't talk about in that prior segment, Gronk's catch yesterday over the middle of the field where he kept it from off the ground and,
yeah,
and rolled.
Awesome. It
was kind of similar.
He's done that before, too. His body control is outstanding.
At that size. But it's definitely Edelman's Super Bowl catch because he was an inch from the ground and the implications at that moment were huge.
That's too. Like with the baseball ones,
the implications,
you have to put the moment in. There were no – I mean, you can put in specific home runs, but – there were no, like, as far as I can remember, like, jaw-dropping defensive plays in the World Series.
George Springer had a couple massive home runs, massive hits in the World Series that you could put it, but it's not an exceptional. It's like, it's just
a moment. It's not a play.
It's about the moment, not the play itself, yeah.
So you had Edelman's catch.
Yes, absolutely.
Then we try to get out of the box here for the last couple, do things other people aren't doing. Front office move of the year. What storyline that wasn't from an actual game was the most impressive, the biggest, the most interesting? Depends on how you want to grade it. Our nominees, the Yankees trading for Giancarlo Stanton, that's going to be up there. The Celtics trading for Kyrie Irving. And I guess you could throw the whole Jason Tatum and all of that in there as well.
Mm-hmm.
The 49ers hiring John Lynch was low-key a great hire. He's built a great team there. And the Knicks, in quotes, firing Phil Jackson and that whole mess that the Knicks were in 2017, almost trading Porzingis. You could say not trading Porzingis was the best front office move of 2017. You could make an argument for that.
I don't want to give the Knicks credit for not doing something that no team would ever do ever.
they almost did it.
I have two. So I'm going to split this up. So for move of the year, front office move of the year, I'm not going to give it to the Celtics for getting Kyrie or Yankees getting Stanton because those were no-brainers, I think.
Okay.
I'm going to go with 49ers hiring John Lynch because he's made great moves and it's proven to be a great decision for that franchise. If I'm going front office of the year, just in general, it is the Celtics and Danny Ainge for what he's done.
No, executive of the year is Danny Ainge, easy.
Absolutely. For all sports, it's him for getting Tatum.
And remember, it's calendar year 2017.
Yes.
So you also have the moves he made at the end of last season to get the Celtics in the position they were there to get to that conference finals.
And the moves that he didn't make. Like, remember when the Sixers wanted the Jalen Brown pick for Jahlil Okafor, up?
Was that 2017?
No, that was a few years ago.
Okay.
So, but I'm just saying, like, in general, the past 3 years, you can't overstate how good at his job he has been. But for general moves, 49ers hiring John Lynch for me.
Disappointment of the year. So this is the other side. The storyline, the team, the whatever that kind of let us down. Ben McAdoo, Jerry Reese, the whole Giants situation was very disappointing. Not just the way they underperformed, but the way they handled everything. Benching Eli. The Josh Brown stuff was 2016, but disappointment from the Giants. The NBA playoffs as a whole. Yeah. We did not get – the Celtics-Wizards series was good. Yeah. Outside of that, you had a lot of 4-0s, 4-1s. Even the NBA Finals, most of those games were relative blowouts. So not a lot of excitement in the NBA playoffs this year. The NFL season, just the injuries in the NFL season have been disappointing. We've seen a lot of stars go down. You never want to see that. And then USA Soccer, I said we'd get back to Christian Pulisic. And if he gets them in the World Cup, maybe we put him on that list. Maybe he's there over McDavid. Maybe he's there over Altuve. But USA Soccer, I was looking forward to it. I won't lie. I liked the World Cup last time. I'm not a huge soccer guy, but it was fun in the World Cup. I was looking forward to doing it again. I was told I was to understand they would be a better team. They would compete. So much for that. I'm actually going to go. You know what? I'm going to go with USA Soccer because the Giants are the Giants. You knew they were going to collapse soon. We all knew the NBA playoffs were going to suck. There's no parity in that league. Injuries happen in the NFL. Everybody's babying about it. Get over it. USA Soccer is my biggest disappointment of 2017. I can't believe I'm saying that.
I agree. And it's between USA Soccer and the Giants. USA Soccer didn't even make it to the World Cup. They didn't qualify. That's brutal.
And they were losing to countries that are like the size of New Jersey.
Iceland has – there's as many people in – I think it's like Fort Worth, Texas as there are in the country
like,
of Iceland.
What, Trinidad and Tobago was one of the countries they lost to?
Just embarrassing. Yeah. Embarrassing. The NFL – I mean, it's an even playing field. You could lose any game at any given moment. So the Giants bombing this season isn't that outlandish. It is, but not compared to USA Soccer not even qualifying for the World Cup. Embarrassing. Embarrassing.
And finally, our D-bag of the year.
Great award.
Spent some time on this one. Who was the most insufferable individual in sports? There are a lot of people we could put on here.
This is an easy one, though, if you're going for the winner.
So I just want to clarify, as always on the show, politics aside.
Yes.
Just, you know, in the sports realm, we have David Price, who, let's go back through, he sucked at the beginning of the year. He had the incident with Dennis Eckersley, he had the incident with Evan Drellick. Remember, we had Jim Murray on the show. He supposedly called out Murray. He did redeem himself slightly at the end there in the playoffs. I will say that.
He had a really good
playoffs. He pitched out of the bullpen. LeVar Ball, I don't need to run through it all. Even politics aside, he's still the favorite, I think. Jerry Jones has been quite the curmudgeon this year, and I think curmudgeon's the right term. And Derek Jeter
like
for D-bag of the year because he was supposed to be the savior for the Marlins. For years, Jeffrey Lurie had been using that team as his own personal bank account. What does Jeter do? He cashes out. He has a fire sale. And then he doesn't go and explain it. Total D-bag move from Jeter.
Mm-hmm.
So David Price, LeVar Ball, Jerry Jones, Derek Jeter, biggest D-bag of 2017.
It's LeVar Ball, and it's not even really close. The guy, Charles Barkley talked about
this. Jerry Jones made a run at him. I have LeVar Ball, too. Jerry Jones made a run. Jerry Jones was such a baby.
I don't think you can compare it, man. I don't think you can compare it. I think LeVar Ball is such a character and is so outlandish, and he's exploiting his kids, and he does it so shamelessly. He is the biggest douchebag, biggest a-hole I have seen in probably well over a decade, probably my lifetime of watching sports. He is the least likable person I have come across. And he's not even an athlete. He's not a coach. He's not an executive. He's a parent of a player.
Oh, forget. You have to be an athlete if you can beat Michael Jordan one-on-one.
Oh, yeah. The guy is shameless, and I get what he's doing is working for his brand, I guess. But
is him being this way. Like, he's doing it for a reason. It's working.
He's doing it at the expense of his kids. His son gets arrested in China, and he uses that as an opportunity to elevate his platform. That is the scummiest thing I've ever heard.
He pulls his kids out of school and sends them halfway across the world. Right.
And I get that if you want him to make it to the NBA, going to UCLA probably isn't going to do it. They're not going to develop there. They're probably not even going to get a lot of time there because they're not as good as Lonzo. But still, maybe the priority for you shouldn't be the priority for your kids. And that's what he does. Number two for me would be David Price, though. Just okay. Add that in.
So I also want to throw out, he wasn't on the list, Jimmy Haslam somehow ruined two football teams this year. the owner of the Cleveland Browns, and obviously that's a disaster. And he was at the helm for the Tennessee coaching search. We all know how that went. So I think you could put him on the list, too. All right, that's going to do it for us. That is a wrap on Alex Leibowitz for 2017 on the Call It podcast.
Can't wait to be back.
We did this when you went away over the summer. You were gone for 2 weeks, and I put you on the spot. I'm going to do it again. Give me a hot take. Give me a prediction, something we can call you on when you get back in January.
Oh, jeez.
So for the record, last time he had Pablo Sandoval not being a Red Sox. It was cut, traded, whatever. It gave you some breathing room, and he was DFA'd, I think it was 2 days before you got, yeah. Or you were back, but we hadn't done a show yet. I think it was 2 days before your first show back. So you'll be out of the country 2 weeks. We won't hear from you much. Give us something to hold on to in the meantime.
All right. This one's very far-fetched. This okay. is just the first thing coming to me.
Okay.
And I don't even think it's going to happen, but I'm going to throw it out there. I'm going to see if it sticks. We're going to get an update on the timeline of Gordon Hayward.
Well, we're getting updates. What do you mean by like we're going to be more specific?
We're going to figure out if it is legitimately realistic that he will be back by the playoffs. I think we're going to figure that out within the next 2 weeks.
That's soft.
You think it's soft?
That's a little soft.
Well, have we really been getting updates?
Let me ask you this. Will we know when you get back if he's expected to play this year?
I think so. I think we'll have a much better idea. I think we'll have a much better idea.
No. You're not understanding me. When you get back, we will be discussing, not necessarily that Gordon Hayward is back, but what is the plan to face
The only reason I don't think that would happen is because I think Danny Ainge is smarter than to have that be a storyline and to have that kind of take over. I'll do another one. Whoever comes back from the IR for the Patriots by the time the playoffs start, which will be probably the week after I get back when they play, is going to be a major difference maker for the Pats and could be the difference in some way to getting them.
All right, I want to specify here again because I want to be able to cold take you. Who comes back?
So who do we have on the IR? We got Martellus Bennett.
The only two guys who can return are Mitchell and Valentine.
Is that really? Those are the only two?
Yeah.
Okay.
You have to be put on the IR with designation of return. You can't just pull somebody back off the. It's two different IR lists.
Okay, so I'm gonna go with. I think they're gonna bring back Valentine because they need more depth on that front seven. And I think maybe not Valentine specifically, but having the depth there is gonna be a huge difference.
Tackle. Yeah, absolutely. Especially we don't know what's going on with Alan Branch. So.
Yeah.
All right, so that's
those are probably softer than the ones I had last time.
The Sandoval one was so perfect.
It was great. It worked out. But I don't think I don't think you're giving me enough credit for Gordon Hayward.
I don't think I was understanding what you're saying. We'll see. We'll see what the Gordon Hayward
I think the storyline will start because we haven't really heard anything. It's been a lot
we
of
heard
insinuation.
That he was out of the boot. We saw he was out of the
He's
boot.
Out of the boot, but that's kind of like that's on par with the timeline. I think we'll know whether or not he is expected to be back by the time the playoffs start. I think that's a harder take than you're giving me credit for.
Okay, fair enough. So we've got, next week, Monday is Christmas Day. I will try to post something Patriots related Monday or Tuesday. You can find that on our Twitter channel at Calling It Podcast. The next Monday is New Year's Day, but that will be the day after last game of the season. There will be some sort of show, if not that day, that week, like a full Patriots, playoff preview. There's also Celtics Cavs that week. I think that's the 3rd of January, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
So there will be a show that week. It may not be Monday. To stay up with all of it, follow us on Twitter at Calling It Podcast. Subscribe on iTunes, and make sure you check us out on clnsmedia.com. So, Leibowitz, it's been a pleasure with you in 2017.
It's been great.
Enjoy your trip. I will see you on the other side. I will talk to everybody else next week. Until then, this has been Calling It, powered by CLNS.